go on. It may be he's done us more harm than we've done him, and though we have acquired a better attitude toward him, I am still not too keen about admitting my faults. Nevertheless, with a person I dislike, I take the bit in my teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but I find it much more beneficial to me. So I go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit. And that's some of what the exercise we just gave you is about, to allow God to move me to a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing my former ill feeling and expressing my regret. Under no condition do I criticize such a person or argue. Simply, I tell him I will never get over drinking till I have done my utmost, circle the word utmost, to straighten out my past.
That's where the book refers to, that he should understand that it's very important that I do this.
I am there to sweep off my side of the street, realizing nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until I do so.
Do I believe that?
Never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed, I stick to my own. If my manner is calm, frank, and open, I will be gratified with the result.
Guiding principles.
In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man I'm calling upon admits his own fault, so feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do I fail to make satisfactory progress. My former enemies sometimes praise what I'm doing and wish me well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw me out of his office. I have made my demonstration and done my part. It's water over the dam. Next paragraph discusses money. Most alcoholics owe money. I do not dodge my creditors. Telling them what I'm trying to do, I make no bones about my drinking. They usually know about it anyway, whether I think so or not. Nor am I afraid of disclosing my alcoholism on the theory that it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise me. Arranging the best deal I can, I let these people know that I am sorry.
That's where the arranging the best deal you can comes from.
My drinking has made me slow to pay. I was just thinking to myself, my sobriety has still made me slow to pay sometimes. I must lose my fear of creditors no matter how far I have to go for I'm liable to drink if I'm afraid to face them. I'll just use a quick example. My most intimate relationship is with the Internal Revenue Service. 7 years of not filing taxes when I first got sober. When it got to this point in time, I went to a CPA and he did all the work, and I sat down with an attorney. He educated me on what they were going to do, and then I went in and made the amend. I'm still paying for that. I've learned some. I do understand how they work. They quite frankly really didn't care that I was in recovery and all that nifty stuff. They wanted their money. That's an amend that I had to make. And it feels good making them. And I don't send them a small amount of change each month. I send them a fairly. And I don't know anyone in AA at some point in time. But I can tell you this is. I'm grateful for the country I live in, and I'm grateful that I'm in an income bracket where sometimes I got to worry about how much I pay in taxes, so I'm back to attitude again, right? You know, I'm an alcoholic. I want to enjoy all the freedoms of the world, but I don't want to pay a dime for them. But that's one I got a lot of experience with.
Perhaps next time you catch yourself bitching about quality problems, just realize what you're bitching about.
Yeah.
Oh, I have these terrible problems. I have taxes I have to pay, which means I made money, which means I, et cetera, et cetera. Quality problems.
Next one's important. Perhaps I committed a criminal offense, which might land me in jail if it were known to the authorities. I may be short in my accounts and unable to make good. I've already admitted this in confidence to another person, but I am sure that I would be in prison or lose my job if it were known. Maybe it's only a petty offense, such as padding the expense account. Most of us have done that sort of thing. Maybe I'm divorced and I've remarried, but I haven't kept up the alimony to number one. She is indignant about it, and she has a warrant out for my arrest. That's a common form of trouble, too. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles we find guiding. Now, this paragraph, highlight this whole paragraph. Reminding myself that I had decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. Again, this is the reminder of why I'm doing this, seeking God, seeking freedom, the stuff that has me blocked from God, myself, and you. Seeking God, seeking truth, seeking freedom. That's why I'm making this thing. I ask that I be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be.
Very important.
I may lose my position or reputation or face jail, but I am willing. I have to be. I must not shrink in anything.
Usually, however, the people are involved. Therefore, we are not to be the hasty and foolish martyr who would needlessly sacrifice others to save himself from the alcoholic pit. A man we knew had remarried. Because of resentment and drinking, he had not paid alimony to his first wife. She was furious. She went to court and got an order for his arrest. He had commenced our way of life, had secured a position, and was getting his head above water. It would have been impressive heroics if he had walked up to the judge and said, "Here I am."
We thought he ought to be willing to do that if necessary, but if he were in jail, he could provide nothing for either family. So we suggested that he write his first wife, admitting his faults and asking forgiveness, thereon being introduced to a letter to make amends. He did, and he also sent a small amount of money. He told her what he would try to do in the future. He said he was perfectly willing to go to jail if she insisted. Of course, she did not, and the whole situation has long since been adjusted.
Before taking drastic action which might implicate other people, we secure their consent. If we obtained permission, have consulted with others, ask God to help, and the drastic step is indicated, we must not shrink. That paragraph is a great guiding principle for a lot of amends. I had armed robbery. I had other criminal offenses. I heard this one guy once, only in AA would someone fake being Sonny Barger. And he was going around speaking in AA saying his name was Sonny B., ex-president of the Hells Angels. But Sonny B. was in prison at the time. And only in AA would somebody get some kind of weird kick out of that, right? And he speaks of this meeting, he tells this horror story. Crime, stuff. I didn't know it wasn't Sonny B. I didn't, you know, keep up on him. And it was in Beverly Hills, and when he was done talking, people were supposed to ask questions. But he scared them all so bad, nobody would raise their hand. And I felt kind of scared a little bit. I felt sorry for the guy. I raised my hand. I said, "Sonny, we must have some similar experiences with some of these crimes like I had with some great amends stories. Can you tell us some? He said, "Well, I was told except when to do so would injure them or others, and I'm others, and if it's going to hurt me, I don't need to make them." And I thought I was going to faint, because the first thing I was ever told about amends is you're not others. So I had these crimes. Most of the crimes involved other guys that I did them with. This one in particular, I beat the rap. A guy refused to testify. The judge was a friend of my dad's. He was screwed over. This detective was really screwed over. And the business I robbed was screwed over. So I first had to go to the guy I did it with and secure his permission. He said, "Sure, but I'm glad the statute of limitations is up." Then I secured an attorney, and I gained counsel, and I got some advice. He said, "You'll probably be glad to hear the statute of limitations is up." And so were the detectives weren't, right? So I went to the detective. He said, "We're not real happy the statute of limitations is, but we are happy you don't live here anymore, and we're glad you're sober." And I went to the owner of the business. He was dead. I talked to his wife. I did exactly what that paragraph talks about, and I get to get free.
One quick experience, criminal offenses. First time through the work with a real sponsor, really doing the work, two of the amends that came up were to drug dealers. And it was just real clear I needed to go make these amends, and it was about money. And, I hear a lot of interesting stuff about this. Oh, you don't ever have to do that because it's illegal. It was apparent to me I need to do this, and I went to one, and that went fine, and I set up a payment schedule and paid him back, and I went to the other guy. See, and this is where I found out why amends are about a spiritual basis and why I don't have a clue as to what it's about. But I went to the guy that I probably did the most with, and he basically said, I'm very, very happy for you that you're in recovery. I care a lot about you and your brother, and just forget about it. And he said, but when I said, "What can I do to make it right?" He said, "Just stay in touch." About a year and a half down the road, he calls me, and he says, "Mark," he said, "I'm ready to quit this stuff." And I was able to go up and do a 12-step call with him. He wound up going to VA hospital for 6 months, got out of the business, sold his franchise, for lack of a better word, moved down to Kansas and got reunited with his family. So you see, you never know what's going to happen. I had to go on that amend. I mean, like I said, I hear a lot of different comments, but that's just my experience with it. I had to go make those two amends. I mean, and that was about criminal offenses. So
I've tried to share with you the myths in Alcoholics Anonymous that I've had to get free of to go past each of these steps. And the biggest myth about this step is that you sit in a meeting and you talk about coming up on maybe your last 10 amends that you're consciously aware of, and people in the meeting say, you know, those people that don't want you to get free. And they say, believe it or not, there are people in AA that do not like watching someone get free. They will do mean, malicious, inconsiderate things to somebody that's getting free, and because they don't like it. And those people will say, you can't finish amends. You'll always be making amends. Those are the same people that say you'll always be recovering, you'll always be sick, you can't go to Mexico by yourself, and they're saying God isn't everything. I can tell you about 200, 300, 400 people that I personally know around this country that each time through the steps, they have finished amends with the power they've been given, every single one that they are consciously aware of. That doesn't mean more aren't revealed, and that doesn't mean we'll never have any more amends. That means the day can come, which is what 10 and 11 is all about. You can be current, present, and in the moment. If there is stuff from 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 1 week ago, 30 years ago, that's not cleaned up, it's my idea, and I'll present this as a consideration. You can't never be in the moment if you're bound to the past. 10 and 11 are about being in the moment. Same with 12. How can I be here for you if I'm not here for my life? How can I be here for my life if I'm still in this life? If I'm still living in the past and I haven't been reborn, how can I be here for this new life if I'm still bound to that life? The more amends you make, the more you will seem like you're talking about someone who died whenever you refer to your past, because someone has died. Death, this is about the death of self.
You know,
finish amends.
What Joe said too, if you look at the history, just the history of civilization, every culture kills all the holy men. We kill them all. Well, trust me, in Alcoholics Anonymous, when you start sharing about, for the first time through, you finished all your conscious amends, you're going to get attacked. And the reason is you're in a room full of people who haven't. You will get attacked. How free do you want to be? Stand for something or fall for anything?
Why do we have a lot of meetings on the promises on page 83 that take place halfway through the ninth step? Because a lot of people in AA have gotten halfway through the ninth step and they've been amazed. Why don't we have a lot of meetings on the 10th step promises? Because a lot of people have never finished nine. And you got to finish nine to experience the 10th step promises. You do not have to finish nine to do 10 and 11. But 10 and 11 will be like night and day when you're not aware of any more amends. You'll really be able to do some stuff with 10 and 11.
Okay, page 80, let's continue. This brings to mind a story about one of our friends. This piece gets important because a lot of us, as we've gotten sober and our lives changed, you get in relationships or you get married and you have businesses, and there's some stuff in the past. And if you go make that amends, it's going to affect your family. So it's given us instructions about how to handle that, to sit down with our family members. If we really feel, trust me, if you've done the work up till now, you'll know if you're supposed to go make that amend. And you need to sit down with the people whose lives are going to be affected and talk about that before you go do that. So why drinking, he accepted a sum of money from a bitterly hated business rival, giving him no receipt for it. He subsequently denied having received the money, and he used the instance as a basis for discrediting the man. He thus used his own wrongdoing as a means of destroying the reputation of another. In fact, his rival was ruined.
Go ahead.
He felt he had done a wrong he could not possibly make right. If he opened that old affair, he was afraid it would destroy the reputation of his partner, disgrace his family, and take away his means of livelihood. What right had he to involve those dependent upon him? How could he possibly make a public statement exonerating his rival? After consulting with his wife and partner, he came to the conclusion that it was better to take those risks than to stand before his creator guilty of such ruinous slander. That's pretty powerful, isn't it? I've often thought about this.
Next sentence is a guiding principle for all your amends.
He saw he had to place the outcome in God's hands, or he would soon start drinking again.
If you don't believe that, you'll never finish amends. So here's a great question. A guy called me about 3 weeks ago, and he said, I'm having trouble knocking out these last 20 amends that I'm aware of. And I said, take one question as a prayer, do it every morning and every night and see what happens. He didn't know I was screwing him over, but I gave him this prayer and I said, ask God every morning and every night to show you if finishing amends has anything to do with whether you drink again or not. And he was done with amends in 2 weeks. He said he had an extremely powerful experience and he was not happy with me. But he was really on fire. He was really on fire that he had finished amends for his very first time.
Freedom, how free you want to get. I want to read that sentence again. He saw he had to place the outcome, meaning the outcome of the amends. We don't have to worry about the outcome of the amends. There's freedom just in that. So he saw he had to place the outcome in God's hands, or he would soon start drinking again and all would be lost anyhow. Everything takes me back to the first step, doesn't it? You see, I'll tell you how simple this is. All of us in here have an amend right now, probably, that we could call up that is the one that we don't want to make. You fill out a card and you look at that, and here's the question. Would I rather go make the amend or would I rather be living in the hell called alcoholism? Guess what? It seems real easy all of a sudden, doesn't it? You see? And I place the outcome in God's hands.
But if nine doesn't have anything to do with one, it's not going to be completed. If four doesn't have anything to do with the first half of step one, it's not going to be completed. They all connect like a chain, and you're only as weak as the weakest one. I watched this man do a thing with a group one time, and he did it with me once verbally over the phone, where I was in nine, but I was getting flaky, and I couldn't finish him. And I call him up, and he says, I don't think it's because... And he talked about seeing each of these experiences that I've had as a link in a chain. And he said, I don't think it's nine that you're really having a problem with. I think it's that you're not really clear on the harm from your eight-step work. And if you're not really clear on the harm from the eight-step work, you're not probably really clear what you asked about to be removed when you did six and seven, because you're probably not really sure what you admitted the exact nature of in your fifth step. That's probably because you're not real clear on what you wrote, because you're not really sure about your decision, because you haven't really chosen whether God is everything or nothing, because you're not quite sure anymore if you're alcoholic. And there I was at what needed to move me through amends. It always goes back to the first half of step one. I can't keep myself sober. I need some power, and I don't know any other way to find this power than to move on in these steps. Because if I had any other bright ideas, I wouldn't be here at this deal.
He attended church for the first time in many years. After the sermon, he quietly got up and he made an explanation. His action meant widespread approval, and today he's one of the most trusted citizens of his town. This has all happened years ago. Chances are we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we're mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised.
Don't forget with these pages, and basically we have done this since Bill's story and with the doctor's opinion. We just did a couple different things with Bill's story. Remember, we're still continuing to turn every statement you can into a question. And using the directions as things that need to be completed.
We doubt if in this respect alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely and sorry for himself. He commences to look around the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he's having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands.
You must say that you may understand,
in fairness, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he's married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Whatever the situation, I usually have to do something about it. If I'm sure my wife does not know, should I tell her? Not always, I think. If she knows in a general way that I have been wild, now wild, circle that word. I like that word. If she knows I've been wild, should I tell her in detail? This is a real important question. We're going to do this. Undoubtedly, I should admit my fault. She may insist on knowing all the particulars. She'll want to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her we have no right to involve another person. We are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that we cannot do, we have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found this the best course to take. I have made three formal amends to wives, and two out of those three had to do this, and I followed this instruction. And I have amend coming up in July in Breckenridge to the last marriage I was in. And I need to share this. I will be much more specific, and the reason is because as a result of the fifth step, seeing my part, I need to be specific. God has made that real clear with me. But between the fifth step and God, you know, follow these instructions and follow your heart and follow the guidance. Our design for living is not a one-way street. It is as good for the wife as for the husband. If we can forget, so can she. It is better, however, that one does not needlessly name a person upon whom she can vent jealousy.
Can we go back to one statement in the middle of 81 I think is extremely important? Whatever the situation is, we usually have to do something about it. That's where what can I do to make it right comes from. I would also like to say, I belong to a group that has been doing this work for only about 8 years. It's a strong group now with 4 meetings a week and 3 retreats a year and a big Christmas party every December, and we're doing really good. But one of our big mistakes in this idea about finishing amends is not staying open. See, we'll take any good thing to an extreme and use it wrong. Don't let the idea of finishing amends be the goal from distracting you from other ones that are owed being revealed to you by shutting yourself off saying, I'm done. And don't get so lost in the approach, going to someone and following that format. This is why I'm here. This is the harm I'm clear on. Is there any other? What can I do to make it right? And that format we went through, don't get so caught up in that you forget about the most important part of your amends is following through on what they ask you to do. So what a lot of people I know have done is, like, let's say you had a normal card the way we filled them out and the back was blank. And you had on the front their name, address, phone number, the word fine, and you had plus or minus, and you had the harm you were clear on, like people read their cards. And let's say after leaving their house, they asked you to do 3 or 4 specific things. Pay back the $500, do this, do this, do this. Put that on the back of your card and put them in a new file thing and then start following through on the things they've asked you to do, and don't throw their card away until you've done what was asked. The approach is done, and I've done my utmost to clean it up by coming to you, but then there's some things you've asked me to do that I need to follow through on, too. We've gotten so lost in the mechanics sometimes in our group, we have forgotten about following through on what you've asked me to do to make it right.
Brett?
Yes? Whatever the situation is, we usually have to do something about it. The second paragraph on 81, first line.
Get back to page 82. Perhaps there are some cases where the utmost frankness is demanded, and that's the situation I'm in July. This is an important sentence. No outsider can appraise such an intimate situation. If you have done the work through here, you have a relationship with God, you've read the instructions, you'll get all kinds of insane outside advice and counsel. Ultimately, you take all that into consideration. It tells us to seek counsel. But ultimately, it says no outsider can appraise such an intimate situation. It may be that both will decide that the way of good sense and loving kindness is to let bygones be bygones. Each might pray about it, keeping the other one's happiness uppermost in mind. Keep it always in sight when dealing with that most terrible human emotion, jealousy. Good generalship may decide the problem be attacked on the flank, rather than the risk of face-to-face complication.
If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding that the patients, mothers, and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have had no homes today and would perhaps be dead. I am like the tornado. Warring is my way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted, selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking who says that sobriety is enough.
I just want to comment about this. I was at a convention, this lady talked about it, and it really hits home here. We take kind, loving, precious people and drive them nuts. Drive them nuts. Drive them into the dirt. We take them down with us. That's another reason for amends. We are so selfish, so self-centered, that we take people down with us. We need to clean that up if we're ever going to get free and stop doing that stuff. And the way that happens is in amends. What's the word of my palm? I'm selfish, self-centered. I don't think about you. And in my own experience, and a lot of men I've done the work with, when we get to this area around family, this is us. You know, we're like a tornado. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships, affections have been uprooted. You know, I've sat across some men and they want to give me this crap about what mom and dad did, blah, 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 blah. It isn't about any of that. It's about what we did. We take beautiful people and we put them in trash cans because of the root of our problem. This is a chance to get free of that. Get rid of that guilt. Get rid of that shame. Get rid of that remorse. Atonement. Get at one with ourselves. But I'm not in denial about the kind of person I am. I am not in denial about that. I have been a brutally selfish, self-seeking son of a bitch. And in this program, I develop a relationship with God, and in amends, I get to get free of that. But I don't walk around here trying to pretend I'm some kind of a pious, holy man. See, I know what I am. I'm an alcoholic. And if you're like me and sitting in this room, when it comes to this area about family, you're seeking truth. Get real honest about your part in this stuff. Doesn't matter what they do.
You get to amends, you're at point A. But you want to get to point B where you're free. And you're faced with all this stuff you've done to all these people. If you don't honestly admit where you are, you can't get to where you want to go. Once again, movement takes place from an honest admission about where I am and what I've done. We have a friend who talks about a man who every time he gets up to the podium, he'll share and he'll talk about stealing money from his son's piggy bank when he was a child. And he'll cry about it and he'll share his feelings and he thinks that's real important, but he's never made amends to his son. I'd like to say something about this statement. We feel a man is unthinking who says that sobriety is enough. There's a story, a joke in Denver about a guy crawling up on the club roof at 1311 York Street, this four-story mansion where they have AA meetings, and blowing away 10 or 15 people down on the street with a hunting rifle. It's a made-up story, but the point is, the people in the meeting room said, well, at least he didn't drink, and it was probably God's will. Those people die anyway. And that's kind of the attitude that's taken sometimes in alcohol. You know, I screwed my wife over today. I punched my boss. I strangled my kids, but I didn't take a drink. Well, what I would say is maybe you probably should have. Right? How long can those of us in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous justify our behavior because we're alcoholic? Maybe you strangled your boss and punched your wife out and screwed your kids over today, not because you're an alcoholic. Maybe just because you're an asshole, right? How long can I hide behind? I mean, there's no clause on my IRS form for alcoholics. The alcoholic clause. Oh, you get off, you don't have to do this, you don't have to be responsible because you fit in the little alcoholic box, you know? I've yet to have a boss who cared that I was alcoholic and gave me any special consideration. Oh, we understand you need more breaks than anybody else because you're alcoholic, right?
It's like you go make amends to a normal drinker and you talk about you not doing it anymore. And they look at you and said, I haven't done that for 60 years. What the hell's the big deal?
Before I was ready to make amends to my brother in Albuquerque, I rushed down from Denver because he was close. I didn't have a lot of amends in Denver because I had been alone drinking my last year there. And then I had some from the 5 or 6 months I'd been sober. But I rushed down to Albuquerque to make amends to my brother. And I hadn't filled out my card or talked to my sponsor. I don't even think I'd gotten to amends yet. I just wanted to feel better. And I rushed down there, and all I could do was tell him the terrible things I had done and say I was sorry. He said, I know you're sorry. You've been sorry for a long time. What are you going to do? And then I read the book several months later and said, a remorseful mumbling that we're sorry won't fill the bill at all. out what they need to say, because sometimes tremendous healing goes on. One of the stories I wanted to tell was my first 4 years of sobriety, two and a half or three years of those 4 years, I was in a relationship with a girl that was in California, and we were back and forth long distance, and then she lived in Denver for a while, and then I screwed things up, and she moved back to California, and my fourth time through the work, I had to go to California to make some amends, and two of them that I wanted to share was hers and one other one. So I get to California, and I'm staying in a motel, and I found the four that I needed to find, and three of them I went to see, and I just made them. And one of them I put a question mark by because I couldn't find her, and then I had this other one that I'd been engaged to. And the one that I couldn't find, I said a prayer, and I put a question mark by her name in the morning. And I said a prayer, and I was asked to speak at a meeting that I would never have ever gone to that night in Los Angeles. And I went to the meeting, and I told my story, and a girl came up to me afterwards, and she says, did you get sober in Denver? You said that in your story. I said, yeah. She said, well, do you know so-and-so? I said, well, as a matter of fact, I'm looking for her. She said, well, she's in Santa Monica. Here's her name, and here's her phone number and her address. The day I said a prayer and put a question mark by her name of someone I couldn't ever find, she showed up in my life that night. So then I call this girl I'd been engaged to, and when I called her, she says, I don't know if I can, and she's in the program. And she says, I don't know if I can see you. I'll pray about it, and I'll talk to my sponsor. She not only prayed about it and talked to her sponsor, she called my sponsor long distance in Denver. And I'm at this hotel waiting to make my last amends in Los Angeles. And I call her back the next day, and she said, well, I prayed about it, and I talked to my sponsor, and I talked to your sponsor, and I'll see you on my terms and on my turf. Come to my mother's house tonight at 6 o'clock. And I go there and I show up, and here's someone that wasn't even sure if she could see me. And it was a little uncomfortable. There was a little small talk. We sit in her mother's living room. I said, this is why I'm here. I'm sure you know, but I need you to know this. This is very important to me. And this is the harm that I'm clear of. And is there any other that I'm not aware of? And 2.5 hours later, there was a strong feeling in the room of shame and blame, and it was not comfortable. And I said, now, do you need to tell me how any of that hurt you? And 2.5 hours later, the feeling in the room had shifted because I was willing and was given the power to let her have her say. The feeling in the room totally shifted to healing and peace and freedom and love and friendship. And I asked, what can I do to make it right? And she says, take me on your trip tomorrow as a friend to San Francisco where you're going. Someone who wasn't sure they could even see me 2 hours earlier or 4 hours earlier. That's the power in amends. The other one I wanted to share was my earliest resentment, which was my earliest memory. It's kind of sad that a guy like me had to do 12 years of therapy off and on, all different kinds, to find out his earliest memory was resentful. Kind of a joke on me, I think. And my earliest memory was hating a father who was 67 when I was 10. That doesn't mean I don't have memories before age 10, but you don't spend 12 years in therapy and not have some earlier memories. But my earliest memory, 4 or 5, whatever year it is I remember, was his age, because he was 57 when I was born, and I took that through my life. And I come to this work, and I start writing inventory, and I begin to feel some forgiveness for this man that I've hated since my earliest memory. And I did 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, and he'd been dead for 9 years. And I flew home to Battle Creek, at Battle Creek, Michigan, and I had been home 4 times sober before amends. And I always saw this kid I grew up with because he's in the program now. I later became his sponsor. I sponsor a kid that I used to drink with. And I would always see him, and we'd go to a meeting, and then we'd go to this club on the way home, a nightclub. And maybe we'd see one or two people from the past. And the time that I went ready to make amends to my family and friends and everybody in that town, and I hadn't gone to my dad's grave yet, we went to an AA meeting, and then we went to this nightclub, and 14 people in chronological order that I knew them walked into that club, and I made appointments with all 14 of them to see them that week. And it just blew my mind. And of course, being a good alcoholic, I waited to go to my father's grave till the last day on my way to the airport. And I went to his grave, and I knelt at his, I walked right to it. And I can't tell you the number of stories of people around this country that have gone to a graveyard after 15, 20 years, not knowing where the grave was, and walked directly to it, looked down, and there's the person they were looking for. And I sat at his grave, and I read this letter, and I had written the letter like I was face-to-face with you, or with him. And I talked about what I needed to talk about how I played God and what I thought I did that had harmed him. And I got up and I was free of feelings that I lived with for 30 years. And I walked out of that graveyard to my car, and the thought was, it's time to go to the airport. And the next thought was, no, it isn't. You're taking a drive. You're going the long way. And you're going to go past the home where you were born and the home you grew up in and the places you drank and used and the ghetto where you used to buy drugs and the bars you used to hang out in. And for the first time in 30 years, those hooks weren't there anymore, and I was free.
I share a couple experiences in this area. I'm a geographic drunk, so it took me 3.5 years to get through consciously my first set of amends, because I had to go to 6 states, and that cost a little bit of money. But I went to Seattle, Washington, and I had set 3 appointments before I went out there. One was to my first ex-wife. There were some other people out there, though, that I needed to see and try and find. I'd had no communication with for a long time, and what happened is I found there was an ex-wife, there was a woman I was engaged to that I literally walked out after wedding plans were all set back in New York City and all other kinds of stuff. There were 2 women I had dated. There was a mother of one of the girls I dated, and I wound up being able to get in touch with all of them. 4 of these women either lived or worked within about 2 miles of each other, and I went and made those amends, and then I went, and I set an appointment to make amends to the mother of this one girl I dated, and she allowed me to come, but basically what happened is she would not allow me to make that amend. And this is one of those where, when I looked at the harm, I didn't think there was much to it. I wound up going back to Seattle about 3 years later, and this time she was willing to let me make the amend, but when we got down to the place of what could I do to make this right, what she said to me is, I don't ever want to see you again. I don't ever want you ever communicating with a single member of my family again. Get the hell out of here. That amend was so important for me because it gave me a chance to see what we're just reading. That were like a tornado, and I saw incredible harm. Amends that I thought I had incredible harm in, I had people look at me and start crying and said, Mark, I loved you. It killed me to watch you kill yourself. Experience at a cemetery had to do with my father. I had made amends to my father. Then he died in 86. 3 years ago, I mentioned I wound up going into a psych hospital with PTSD and some other stuff. A lot of memories came back that I didn't have before. That had to do with what I'll call the truth in the second column. You see, I didn't see the truth in the second column when I made my amends with my father. So there was some more anger and some more resentment I had to write. So last year when I went up to Breckenridge, Colorado to that convention, Fellowship of the Spirit, he's buried in the Veterans Cemetery in Denver. And I went there, and if you've ever been in those... They're just a mass of crosses, and I had no recall of where that was. So I said a prayer, and I was absolutely directed to his grave, and I got down on my knees, and I read this letter to him, and I got free. And today, it's still hard for me to share this without getting real emotional. I got free of that, you know, and my father loves me. He always did, and I love and respect him. That's the kind of stuff that happens through this process, you know, where you can get free. So don't ever let people tell you you can't do that, that you can't get free of that. You know, and we're talking about a man who savagely beat me. I mean, I could go on and on and on and on. And today he's one of my guardian angels, you know. What a deal. Go ahead.
You think about some of the people in your life that you need to approach, and you're in step one or you're in step four. You could no more go to them than the man in the moon, because you're still blocked by resentment and fear and all kinds of stuff. And you get through step 8, and all of a sudden the stuff that was in the way when you were thinking about those amends in step 1 or step 4 or even when you were reading step 5 is gone, and you have the power to go to those people.
you could no more have gone to when you were in the first step than the man in the moon. I now no longer listen to people who say, I can't go to Des Moines, Iowa, and make amends. How will I ever get there? I grew up there, but I can't go there because of one kid that I sponsored, and here's the deal. He was raised in Hong Kong. I'm sorry, he was born to French parents who lived in Hong Kong, but he was educated in England, and then he lived in South America, but then he came to the United States. He had a huge inventory. We got through step eight, and we didn't do piles by willing to do or not willing to do. We did piles by continent. North America, South America, England, France, and Asia. That gentleman just finished his last amends 3 months ago. North America, South America, England, France, and Asia. 350 amends, made every single one of them. He's free. He's helping bring about a wholesale change in AA in Hong Kong and Bangkok right now. How free do you want to be? How free do you want to be?
Page 83. Yes, there's a long period of reconstruction ahead. I must take the lead. I love this. People say, I'm waiting to run into somebody on the street.
Aren't there some clubs and stuff where they've changed the steps on the wall, and rather than whenever, it's wherever, or rather than wherever, they make it whenever? Have you ever seen that? What's the short form say? The short form says, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, and they'll change one word in the ninth step, throw everybody, whenever possible. Like, when you show up in my life, I'll probably make my amends to you, right? I think the most overlooked word in the short form of the 12 steps is the last word of the eighth step.
All. You know, it's interesting, if you think amends,
we never had any problem going to these people when we wanted something from them.
Did we? And I had no problem finding them. Went to great lengths. Same thing happens for us in the men.
Yeah, but if I see in 1 through 8 that what I have done is given you the power over my life by resenting you and harming you, I've given you power. You can look at amends as going back to get the power you've given these people. Because some of them have forgotten all about you and you've been consumed with them. They have owned you. They have owned you for years. And you're going back to get the power you gave away.
A remorseful mumbling, we are sorry, will not fill the bill at all. I ought to sit down with the family, and I need to frankly analyze the past as I now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that my own actions are partially responsible. Now I'm going to be given a spiritual tool. I don't have an immediate family other than me and my two dogs, but I do have an AA family, so this is a spiritual tool I use around my AA family. It says, so I clean house with the family, and I ask each morning in meditation that my Creator show me the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it.
One of the most powerful statements they've made so far. Do you know why spiritual paradoxes make no intellectual sense? I mean, have you ever imagined taking a brand new guy who's never been to a meeting? Well, we screwed him up yet with all these strange ideas. Just 15, 20 years of drinking, fresh out of the bar. Put him in a room and just tell him all the spiritual paradoxes that you've experienced up to today, and he'd probably run out of there and think we were some of the craziest people in the world. Because it doesn't compute up here that to admit I have no power, I receive more power than I've ever been given. But as long as I think I have any at all, I never get any more than I already have, which is little or nothing at all. But some of us in this room understand that with a different organ than our head. The spiritual life is not a theory, is because the spiritual life doesn't make sense rationally. Doesn't make sense. And then if you ever do get anything here in AA, what we want you to do with it right away is give it away. That doesn't make any sense. You have to decide to turn your will and your life over to the care of God to get a new life back and a will that you can begin to use properly. That doesn't make any sense. To see that you're alcoholic, maybe you should look at that you're not. To come to believe, you should see where you don't. On and on and on. None of this makes any sense. That's why the spiritual life is not a theory. You and I have to live those things to understand those things with our heart, not our head. People in this room that understand to keep what they have, they must give it away, haven't studied that. They've done that. They've experienced that. They know those truths experientially.
It's like someone said to me, Mark, you enjoyed Towson. My response was, if I'm here, I love being here. You see, you can't explain the spiritual life. You must experience. There's nothing intellectual about the spiritual life. It's something that we experience. Goes on to say that unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words.
What can I do to make it right?
I must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone.
There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Now here's the answer to the one we people always say, finish amends. I've got some I can't even find. Here's what it says. Some people can't be seen. We send an honest letter. I know guys that have gotten free of amends they could never find by writing out a letter, reading it to someone they trust, and mailing it out to the universe, like the last place you knew they lived. Somewhere, pray about where to send it. Get every amends done to the best of your ability, even the ones you can't find.
Go to libraries. Go through old address books. See if there's any... You know, the book says I got to go to the utmost of my ability. Joe was sharing an experience. A guy came and spoke in his group, and he talked about hiring a private detective. Wow, that's interesting. I guess it's back to the same question. How free do you want to get? If it's, you know, if it's down here, it's on your amends list. But there's some things we can do to try and find these people from our past.
There may be valid reason for postponing in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. Here's some guiding principles. To be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. Then the promises that we spend way too much time on, that we've ritualized to the point of convincing people these are the only 12, and we waste too much time on trying to attain them than doing everything up to this page to get them. I remember being at a meeting one time in North Denver, and they were doing a meeting on these promises at the ninth step, and I started to whine that they weren't happening in my life, and this old guy who cared more about me than how I felt about what he had to say, he says, you want to know how to get the promises on 83? I said, yeah. He said, do what's on 1 to 82. If you're painstaking about this phase of your development, you'll be amazed before you're halfway through. Anyone here ever gotten halfway through amends and not been amazed? How many here have ever gotten halfway through amends? How many here have ever finished amends? You think it's hard to find people around this country to do the work. Try and find people around where you live that have finished amends, everyone they're consciously aware of. You're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. You'll not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. You'll comprehend the word serenity and you will know peace. No matter how far down the scale you have gone, you will see that your experience can benefit others. The feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. This sounds like the opposite of page 52. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. If 52 is how untreated alcoholism feels and looks and sounds, maybe this is how the opposite of untreated alcoholism feels. Self-seeking will slip away. Your whole attitude and outlook on life will change. Your whole attitude and outlook on life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave you. You will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle you. You will suddenly realize that God is doing for you what you could not do for yourself. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but they will always materialize if you work for them.
Circle the word work.
Before we take our last break, I could go on for the rest of the day about God shots and amends, but there's two more I want to tell you. I've talked a lot about my father, but there was a man in my life I met when I was 13 who was closer to me than my father, by my choice. And he was like a genius, Charles Manson, Hell's Angel, been in Vietnam, 101st Airborne. He was so... He'd been in a car club before he was in the Hell's Angels. The photographic memory, absolute intriguing guy who would take us on adventure after adventure. And he had like a little troop that hung around him. There were four or five of us, including him. And he had us all put a star on our hands when we were 14 years old to represent him and the four of us. They're all dead today. He died in my arms of an overdose of the heroin that I bought after he hadn't done any for a year. And one died in prison, and one died in a drug deal with a syringe stuck in his heart, and the other one died drunk in a car accident. I'm the only one of those five left today. And I made amends to him through a letter. And I made amends to his parents, and I made amends to his brother, but I could never go to his grave in Las Vegas. And I was in Las Vegas 3-4 times a year my first 4 years of sobriety. On my fifth birthday, I went to Vegas with my three good friends at that time, and I woke up one day, and the thought was, today's the day you go. No resistance, no struggle. Got a driver, went right out to Henderson, hadn't been there in years, walked right to his grave, got down on my knees, said what I wanted to say, looked down, and it was the date of his death. 15 years to the day that he died. My friends said they could feel it from the car. It was so powerful. And I got to get free of the guilt of buying the dope that had killed him. Because I always had a picture of John as being somebody, when this guy goes, it'll be something really, really. He lived through everything. And it was just a little pile of dope after not doing any for a while. And I had done the same. We'd taken a pile and split it in half. And he did his, and I did mine, and he died, and I didn't. And I blamed myself for that for a long time. And the other one is, oddly enough, an amends that I didn't make so I could feel better. And it was one of my first ones, and I didn't talk to my sponsor about it, and I didn't go over the card. I ran up to Aspen to make amends to one of these women that I had pregnant during my first sex inventory, and so I could feel better. And my motive was to feel better. And I learned a valuable lesson. I got to Aspen, I got a hotel, I got on my knees, I said a prayer, thank God, and I started walking to her store, and between my hotel and her store, I ran into six people that knew her, including her sponsor. I mean, I need a 2x4 across my head to hear a message, right? And one of them was her sponsor, and her sponsor said, this woman is not ready to see you, and for the first time in my life, I think I didn't do something so I could feel better, and I got free. And several months later, she opened the door for us to see each other. We made our amends, and I got to get free. But I got free going back to my hotel and thanking God for giving me the message that she wasn't ready to see me. On and on and on, story. I think to be in the amends process and clear, by in the amends process, I mean you've done everything in 1 through 8. Not just to leave here today with some guilt and go make a few amends so you can get some guilt off your back, but to do 1 through 8 and move into amends in a clear position can be the most exciting time you've ever had in your life. I would hate to see anybody in AA miss the stuff that goes on during the amends process. Amazing things start to happen. People you never thought you'd ever see again start showing up. Amazing stuff starts to happen.